A three-day conference on the theme of Rethinking Europe, a Christian contribution to the future of the European project, concluded today with participants attending Mass at St. Peter's Basilica. The conference was sponsored by the Commission of the Bishops' Conferences of the European Community, COMICE, and brought together political and religious leaders at the Vatican for the high-level dialogue. Last night, Pope Francis addressed the conference, highlighting two main contributions the Christians have made to Europe and can make for the future. The first, and what he said was perhaps the greatest contribution Christians can make to Europe, is to remind her that she is not a mass of statistics or institutions, but is made up of people. But to acknowledge that others are persons means to value what unites us to them. To be a person connects us with others. It makes us a community, the Pope said. And so the second contribution Christians can make is to help recover the sense of belonging to a community. During the conference, Vatican Radio's Lydia O'Kane was able to speak with some of the participants, including Noel Traynor, the Bishop of Down and Connor in Northern Ireland, and Francis Campbell, the former British ambassador to the Holy See. Lydia asked them about the Christian roots of Europe and about the role Christian identity might play in Europe's future. Here first is Bishop Noel Traynor.
Well, it's wonderful to see the initiative being taken by COMICE together with and in cooperation with the Secretariat of State, bringing people together from so many nations, from so many cultural backgrounds, linguistic backgrounds, and experiences of Europe, with different narratives about Europe, to rethink, take a time to rethink and reconsider the pertinence and the major contribution that Europe has made to the history of this continent since the midst of the 20th century, and is now called to make to a Europe characterized by some apprehension and fear about the future in a global context which poses many challenges to the human family and therefore also to the Christian and Catholic family in Europe and on our planet.
So for me, the future of Europe, or to rethink Europe, has to come down to the renewal of Europe, and not just for the purposes of Europe, but indeed the renewal of the West. I think Europe, somewhere along the way in terms of the process of European integration, it lost touch with its roots. It became about the market, it became about regulation. It ceased to be about peace and about the politics and about the cohesion of a society. And for me, these last few days have really been a chance to step back and to look at how Europe can act as a renewal, as an invitation for renewal, coming out of Toynbee's call that Christianity at the heart of our civilization, at the heart of our civilization, asks and functions as a constant dynamo that renews the civilization. So I think for the future, Europe can serve a function for our global society as a place that doesn't just simply reduce us to economic agents or to market principles, but actually sees us as fundamentally human, with a complete wide variety of our various identities feeding into something, but that fundamentally steps apart or stands apart and actually serves to renew something of the Western civilization, which has perhaps gone a little bit away from its founding principles.
What the Vice Chancellor, Francis Campbell, has just said is very true. This first 50 years of European construction, very technically based, now finding itself, this Europe, in this challenging context. And one of the impulses coming from these days' reflections, I think, will also be a call to the local churches in the member states, as well as to member state governments and civic leaders, to create spaces for this kind of dialogue. Because this kind of dialogue and discussion is needed at the very grassroots. Europe, as Schumann said, will be made in many steps, but most of those steps, the steps for credibility and for anchorage, for rooting in the demos, in the people of Europe, must be taken more and more at grassroots level. I think that's very important.
It can't be. Some have been looking over the course of these last few days as to why did Brexit occur? And I'm sure, like the Bishop, I've been asked many times, and there is no single answer. But I think if Europe ends up being something of an elite sport, if it doesn't bring people with us, if it doesn't talk to people about what the society means, about how that translates, about how Brussels translates, then I think we risk confusion. Whereas I think if the European identity is as much a part of our identity as our region, as our religion, as our national identity, if it's seen as complementary rather than threatening, and it has been seen by some, not by me, but it has been seen by some as threatening, then I think there's something lacking that we need to get back to. And I think churches and faith groups have a particular role as primary agents in society to try to open up that space for the debate. And I think that that's what these few days have been about.
Yes, indeed. And what I find interesting is that at this particular junction in 2017, 60 years after the signing of the Treaty of Rome, even though the provisions for dialogue between church and the European Union institutions were established embryonically with an annex to the Treaty of Amsterdam, I have a sense that only now, after quite a few years after the Treaty of Lisbon, where there is an article in the primary law of the European Union which obliges the European Union institutions to engage in dialogue with churches, faiths, and with philosophies in society, only now are the leaders of Europe, not all of them, but the majority of them, beginning to realize the significance of this new article in the primary law of the European Union, which is not an expression of privilege for church or faith, but is rather a recognition of the role that churches and faiths and Christians and Christian communities play in the irrigation and in the rebirthing of the tissue and the humus of values without which politics is not possible on the long run.
And you hear about people talking about Brexit and the concerns about Brexit, because there is kind of a general confusion about Brexit at the moment.
Yes, there is a lack of clarity, and therefore indeed a degree of confusion, a significant degree of confusion. Insofar as the people of the Diocese of Down and Corner are concerned, many have expressed to me concerns about the impact of Brexit on the economy. Now, concretely speaking, that means an impact not just on jobs and industry and on foreign direct investment and so forth. It also entails very concrete existential impact, bread and butter impact, on the future of family life. Many others have expressed very profound concerns about the impact of Brexit on the future functioning of the Belfast Agreement and on the process of peace building and reconciliation. And I believe that that is real. The reality is that not only the economy of Northern Ireland and the economy of the Republic of Ireland, but also the entirety of life has become so integrated since the Belfast Agreement and the attendant agreements on it. Life has become so interdependent, integrated, and enwebbed that the emergence, the prospect even, of a hard border is not only difficult to conceive, but most concerning for its impact on economy, on politics, on stability, on peace, on reconciliation, and also on cultural sensibility, the sense of being together as a single family. So really, if we're now talking about rethinking Europe, we seriously need to facilitate through society responsible rethinking of Brexit.
Francis Campbell, just to get your thoughts on that.
So there is one way to look at Brexit, which is to look at what the issues that it throws up. I'm probably still contemplating why it happened. What's the underlying reasons of why it happened? Why within the United Kingdom did we see wide variations between London and Scotland and Northern Ireland on the one hand and the rest of England and Wales on the other hand? And what does that say about the future cohesiveness of a society? And I think somehow along the way it has to come back to identity and why different countries in the European Union joined the European Union. For some, there's a very, very strong utilitarian link about their independence, about taking their place on the world stage, about overcoming a history in the Warsaw Pact countries. And I think the United Kingdom or parts of the United Kingdom struggled with finding that utility. And I think that in a sense, the elites in Britain over the years, over the last 60 years, didn't bring parts of the population with them. That when you presented Europe as a bureaucracy and as a market, yes, it was a bureaucracy and a market, but a bureaucracy and a market is only part of the picture. There is also many other parts of the picture about a social Europe, about the rights that European citizens have, about the freedom of movement, about the Erasmus programme. And I fear that, in a sense, both what happened in the United Kingdom and what really was happening in other parts of Europe, that we became detached from the project, that the detachment has led to this result, which now has a series of consequences for the United Kingdom and indeed for many of the United Kingdom's neighbours. But I think the fundamental questions that it asks, why did it happen? And I think it's going to take us quite some time. It'll be left to historians to fully unpack what the drivers of this were. But I don't think the drivers of it were recent. I think they go right back. And for me, having experienced life in different European countries over the course of my studies and also professional career, I was always struck that in many of those other countries, Europe complemented one's identity. It didn't detract from it. But somehow, for parts of the United Kingdom, it ceased to be complementary and it became something that detracted from the identity. And I think that that's something that really poses us as a people a real problem and a real dilemma going forward.
Is it important to talk of a Christian Europe?
Yes, it is. This is part of the rethinking that is being initiated here. The capacity to rethink the pertinence, the massive contribution that the Christian tradition and particularly Catholic social teaching has made to the initiation, the conception, the initiation, and indeed the implementation of the European project. On the Brexit, it's true that a lady who's taking part in this conference and who has written an article in the French Jesuit review Etude, she has spoken about Brexit being an état d'esprit, not merely a phenomenon. One of the triggers, I think, in the Brexit outcome has been this sense that the European project has been led and has been determined by an elite which has not taken sufficient cognizance of local identities and also local aspirations and the faith and value systems of some of its citizens. And therefore, I believe that just as in many church initiatives and synods, the question of our concept of the human person, what we mean by anthropology, and the open, universal narrative of the Christian anthropology and anthropological tradition, that is something that needs to be reappreciated and, I would say, reintegrated into the political narratives, and they are plural, about European identity and its future.
Just on a final note, Francis Campbell, Europe's identity, Chris, back to the idea of Christian, Europe's Christian identity, rethinking but looking at Europe's Christian identity.
I personally have no objection to that, but I think it depends on how it's framed. The question I have is, how is Europe cohesive? And I think when the debate about Europe's Christian roots and the Constitution for Europe at the time of the millennium was debated, I think some people thought that the Church was looking for privilege. It wasn't looking for privilege. So Pope Benedict XVI, or Joseph Ratzinger as he was then, talks about the risk of Europe secularizing and of drying up, of losing a connectedness to its 2,000-year roots. It wasn't about saying this group belongs and this other group doesn't belong. But you can't integrate people into nothingness. They have to be integrated into a set of values. And the set of values, whether they be Christian or Islamic or Hindu in terms of a society, is something that our cultures have evolved with and grown with over centuries. So I think for us, actually finding the space and the ideas around which Europe wants to be cohesive, I think that is now fundamental. Because if we think that we are simply going to reduce all our differences to nothingness and that we will integrate people into nothingness, that will not happen. It can't happen because it's simply there is nothing to integrate someone into.